disciplines. And if we had not made certain mistakes, those disciplines would not be there. But the essential principle of religion is joyous. It is full of hope, faith, and love. And where these cease or fail or are overshadowed by the terrors of the time, there is a despondency which is extremely detrimental to the growth of the person himself. And this despondency is also largely reflected in psychical phenomena. Most of the prophecies that are coming from no one knows where today are despondent. 9 out of 10 books of prophecy announce direful things. Everything is going to go wrong. Some years ago, about 10 years ago to be exact, I picked up a couple of books of this type of prophecy. And I looked them over, and it told what year the great earthquake was likely, and another year in which plagues would rage the earth, and another year where wars and calamities would come in. It was really, really very cheerful literature, but had a wide circulation because they intrigued the emotional pressures of the person. The incidents were dated. And coming upon the situation many years later, I chanced to look through the books. Every date that they had mentioned had already passed. And the various events just didn't happen. Well, when an event like that doesn't happen, there's only one thing, there are two things possible. One is that we made a mistake, and the other is that God changed his mind. And I think it is safer to assume that we made a mistake. And I think that mistake is partly due to this sadness, this sorrowness, this martyrdom that we have associated with religion for centuries. What we need is a religion that rejoices in good, instead of being a faith which constantly punishes evil. And often mistakes the most common healthy attitudes of people for evil. If a person is happy, they are some way morally delinquent. It is taken for granted. Well, actually, if we look at the sky and the mountains and the rivers, we see the universe is a pretty happy thing. It has its problems. It's not all one grand vacation. But there is an infinite opportunity to express gratitude, to understand the rules and laws of life, and to learn to obey them. I've been much impressed recently with the nature films that have been appearing on television. These nature films tell us beyond anything in the world can deny that animals, birds, insects, all kinds of creatures have loyalties, have convictions, and that in all through the animal kingdom, the mother defends her young, and never under any condition does she fail in the development of those instincts which have been glorified, amplified, and intensified in the life of the human being. We are in a world of law and order, and if that law and order is maintained, there are no great shadows on the walls. When we read the white handwriting on the wall of heaven, we should remember we did the writing, not the hand of the infinite. It is our own failure to live the principles we believe. And there is no possibility of a psychic experience being a substitute for right living, a substitute for the joy experienced in a realization of something. All around us, there are marvelous things to know and to do. So with our religion, we take a little time each day, which we might consider devoted to digestion, to assimilation, to making the things of the day realities that are going to live on in our lives. The adventures of each day have their meanings. Things we have done, things we have seen, things we have learned are all very important parts of our unfolding consciousness. So as a result of that, it is good for us to have a diversified life. One of the problems that we've had in recent years is the vital and terrible differentiation between sacred and secular matters. On the one hand is religion, on the other hand is the rest of the world. We are expected to live entirely on a level of revelations and of certain inhibitions and frustrations. On the other side is the secular world. Now, the secular world isn't all it ought to be, but as far as that's concerned, neither is the religious world. These worlds are both under pressures. But in the secular world, we have opportunities to develop values which we should not overlook. The mere fact that we want to become spiritual should not prevent us from studying arts and sciences, from developing skills, from increasing knowledge. It does not develop an adversity against hobbies or interests. It doesn't prevent us from becoming square dancers or anything of this nature. It depends upon ourselves. But the person who is all wrapped up in themselves is the smallest package in the world. It is something no one can afford to be. So our religion should be constantly fed by constructive experiences. It should be fed by beautiful art, beautiful music, by a journey into the woods or into the forest. It should be fed by the experience of being with children or watching and working with the aged. Everything that happens is important. And it's all important in helping us to mature. And our spiritual over-self is released in our maturity. Nothing else can release it. And wherever we block out anything that is constructive, that is reasonable, we limit on or restrict our own growth. And the growth that is most important is the growth that we gain by living constructive lives in this world. And this is the thing that is being damaged, to some degree at least, by the present tendencies in, we might say, metaphysical religions. There is too much emphasis upon the religious side and its frustrations. But the main reason for this, in most cases, is the subtle problem of the individual catering to his own desire to be enlightened. All of these various, or most of these various patterns, offer the person the opportunity for greater spiritual growth, quick, by a system, by following a certain attitude, by joining a certain organization. This person gains a superior relationship with other human beings. And this superiority is the defeating factor. The individual who tries to save his life shall lose it. But the one who loses his life in the service of God gains everlasting life. The person who is constantly trying to be saved is not the one who gets there. The one who gets there is the one who has forgotten all to save someone else and maybe drowns with them. It is a different attitude, a different relationship with life. And this different relationship of life is being very definitely undermined at the present time in many areas. It is, everything seems to be based upon making it easier for people to be weak, making it easier for people to get what they want without deserving it, and of course making it easier for those with certain skills to exploit those who do not have these skills. All that has to do with the growth of the person is a result of attitudes. In other words, enlightenment is the final reward for good karma. And enlightenment is inevitable. The idea that karma goes on forever is false to the teachings of the East, both Buddhist and Hindu. Karma is something that is the accumulation of mistakes. And this accumulation of mistakes constantly confronts us with situations by which we could understand these mistakes and correct them. But enlightenment is the result of good karma. It is the result of the individual who has given everything of himself, demanding nothing, and who has placed the good of all above the good of the individual, who has tried in every way possible to serve the plan which is to release all humanity from their own ignorance, superstition, and fear. The person who has forgotten himself in the service of others is the one most likely to receive a legitimate revelation. all others must be regarded with certain apprehension, certain misgivings, because they do not represent the proper approach to the problems of life. So here we are in our present century with all these things happening and all this flood of literature coming in on us and all these different ways. And we'll stop for a moment and go into the other area of consideration, and that is nutrition. Well, nutrition is to the body what integrities are to the mind and soul. The individual is now becoming more and more health conscious. But health to him is merely the fulfillment of his desire for physical freedom from ailments. He is very much like Alcibiades in the dialogues of Plato. Plato once said of Alcibiades, who was more or less an Athenian fop, a person of who thought a great deal of himself and did very little that was good in life. So someone said, "What about Alcibiades?" And Socrates said, "He is a young man with a lead dagger in a diamond sheath. He has a wonderful body and nothing in it." Now today, most people are functioning on that attitude. Save the surface and you save all. Save the appearance and you're a success. Pull off a few pounds and your universal destiny is assured. Catering to this are probably 100 or 200 diets a year. And anyone who follows any one of those diets long enough will probably get into trouble. But people don't care, because they want to keep the surface. They want the surface to look fine. So they sacrifice the inner life to the fulfillment of appearance. Now, on the other side, where we are dealing with mystical things, we are also facing a nutritional problem. We've got to feed the soul if we want it to amount to anything. If we want it to serve the purpose for which it was intended, if we want it to fulfill the unfoldment of our lives, we must give it proper nutrition. Now, the nutrition of the soul cannot be taken in through the mouth. It has to be brought into us in other ways. The soul is nourished on beauty, on affection, on friendship, on self-sacrifice, on sincerity, and on integrity. The soul grows when the individual meets his responsibilities joyously, fully, and because, not because of fear of retribution, but because of love of truth. If we love truth more than we love ourselves, we have a very good chance of getting there. But as long as our lives are very largely dominated by self-interest, we are not going to get very far. So the nutrition of the soul is to build a better, complete personality. And this brings into our minds the whole field of learning. We have arts and sciences. We have specializations of 100 different kinds. Some of these specializations are largely industrial or economic, and therefore well provided for as far as students are concerned. But some of these advancements, some of these advantages, are very largely the works for a higher type of consciousness, a higher type of mind, a person more deeply involved in constructive things. And every person who has religious motives should try to build up a better understanding of world religion, what it has stood for, what it has accomplished, and why, in some cases, it has failed. It is absolutely necessary to know what the world believes. And this is much more easily attained through direct contact with different faiths than it is through any metaphysical experience, because that experience is very likely to be erroneous unless the person already has a deep and abiding knowledge of the faith involved. This is one of the reasons why most Oriental development exercises are not very successful with Western people. It is because these exercises are part of a total life pattern. The exercises are geared to a way of life, to concepts, to ideals, to understandings, to responsibilities, to long-established cultural trends, and the acceptances of long-honored social responsibilities. Therefore, to try simply to breathe one's way into a high state of yoga or something is very unlikely when you do not know anything about the subject. You do not know how it is lived, what it means, why those who have followed it do follow a certain course. For example, in India, a teacher that I know or knew, I believe they have now retired from society, as most of them do. If you were fortunate and you came to him when you were 10 or 12 years old and came from a good background, a family of devout people, that teacher would begin to gradually help you to strengthen your internal resources. And your probationship, or maybe your chelaship, would extend for about 10 years. For 10 years, you would do what you were told, nothing else. You would not only do it because you were told, but primarily because you respected the person who told you. His reputation as a teacher was known all over the country. He had many disciples, all of whom had done well. Therefore, you did what he ordered, never with a moment's hesitation. No matter how menial the task, it was done with perfect faith and peace of mind. After about 10 years, in which you proved that you could obey, it began to be time to think about the possibility of getting to the point where you could order something, where you could not only obey but teach. So after that first 10 years of chelaship, you might have a good discipleship for another 10 years. And by the end of the 20 years, you would probably be involved in yoga. Now we expect to take it out of a book in 2 weeks. We expect to get it in 10 easy lessons. And we wonder why, after having gotten it, we haven't gotten what we expected. But this isn't the worst. I've known a number of cases in which, having read these books, the individual had a series of psychological experiences in which he believed he had the yoga. He believed that he was practicing it, simply because he imagined that he was, and had some dreams and things to support it. Then all of a sudden the thing fell apart. And the dreamings and legends that he had accumulated turned on him. And he found that he had not achieved anything except a very dangerous thought form. So the problem of understanding all these things is very hard for Western people. We are born in a hurry. And as a result of that, we live in a hurry. Our idea of a busy day is to spend so many hours at the office and the rest in front of a television set. The fact that the programs are atrocious is regrettable, but we're still there. I understand now that there is a move to get rid of the non-commercial stations because they are elite groups. They like opera and good music and biographies and good drama. That makes them an elite group. And this an elite group is not appropriate in a democratic society. So we've got to move those over until they all are nothing but murders, in order to have social equity. Well, all this shows just exactly the problems that we have. We are simply very immature in matters of the spirit. We have built a great deal of physical construction. Economically, industrially, we are a very powerful people. But in our souls, in our inner lives, we are not maturing properly. We have the great need to give expression to that part of ourselves which is the best. And it is not until the best governs the rest that we can be an enduring civilization. The best of ourselves is our unselfishness. It is the recognition that we are here in a very simple relationship with life, that we are here to grow together, to work together, and to discover the unity of life itself. We are here to create a great cosmotheism in space, a great democracy of cosmic systems. We are here to serve and love and fraternize with one another. Instead of that, we have gone into computers, now we are going into video games, and no one knows what will be next. But none of these things touch the inner life. And after a while, the inner life starts to scream. It wants something, but it doesn't know what it wants. It turns to evangelism and may or may not find what it wants. It searches in all directions and very often is caught in the web of mystery. Mystery becomes the escape from that which is completely physical. But the escape is dangerous unless the person involved is already stabilized in something. This rush from materialism to idealism with no growth, no practice, no discrimination in between is not safe. So we have to constantly try to build a releasing function within ourselves. Good reading, meeting with people who have interest and understanding, serving public good in any way that we can, constantly enlarging our fields of knowledge. I always tell about my old friend Dr. Bronson, who was one of the grand old souls of my early life. And one day I saw him. He was nearly blind and had had paralysis agitans for years, but he was walking along with a book under his arm. I said, "Doctor, what you reading?" Oh, he says, "This is the first year of Spanish." He was about 80. And I said, "Well, Doctor, aren't you starting the language a little late?" He says, "It's never too late. The next time I'm here, I think they'll be doing a lot of Spanish going around. And I'm getting a start now." I talked to him more. Well, he said, "How am I going to help people if I don't know their language? So if I'm going to help people, I've got to learn other languages. Because most of the people who are miserable need some kind of language guidance in their own worlds." So it's all in the motives. It's all in the enduring of principles and characters. We're not any of us going to finish a big project at this time. We're all going to go out half finished. But that is what brings us back. And actually, if we could get out of here all finished, it'd be because we live in an awfully small universe. We've got to outgrow more than we've even grown into at the present time. But this is not only our duty, it is a wonderful realization of the infinite possibility of life. That there is no limit upon our lives except the limits we place ourselves. And these limits we gradually outgrow through repeated embodiments. So in the problem of growth, it isn't so much the development of esoteric faculties as it is the earning of a better embodiment by meeting the needs that have been brought over from previous mistakes. We come here, we have a disposition that's difficult. Sometimes we're born with a prejudice that is almost insurmountable. We come here with a quick temper or a slow temper. We are here disillusioned at birth and never get over it. Or we're here full of optimism and no substance, which actually also ends in difficulties. We bring into the world the faculties and developments that we have left unfinished. If we have no sense of humor, it's because we didn't finish it previously and we've got to learn now. If we are interested in the arts, of music, or literature, anything of this nature, we have an impulse because of past growth. But we must develop this impulse through gradually maturing it and making it richer in values. And everything that happens has a spiritual overtone. Every book has a meaning, for good or bad, according to our understanding. We can learn something from mistakes. We can learn a great deal from errors. We can also come to broader understanding by reading something that isn't true. But it is necessary for us to gradually realize that it isn't true and realize why we might be tempted to accept it in the gratification of some personal attitude. The person in us is a wonderful being, but it's adolescent. We may be quite elderly in appearance, but maybe we're children inside. We're all children in the great plan of things, because we are not anywhere near the end, which is our maturity. We have a long way to go. But it doesn't mean that it's a long way of suffering. It means that it's an opportunity day by day to overcome suffering, to bring into our own lives a freedom from the limitations which we have imposed upon ourselves. It is perfectly possible, therefore, to grow in various ways. And if you find a little core of meditational life inside yourself, you then use this like a little candle. And in the old paintings, I remember directly, there's a picture of an old saint that is attributed to one of the Masters of the Virgin, an artist whose name is not recorded. He is sitting reading the Bible. It's on an easel in front of him. And by his side is a single candle. And he's reading the Bible by the light of this single candle. And it is presumed to be a portrait of Saint Jerome. This one little light is being cast upon the scripture. And this candle signifies the eternal soul spirit light within ourselves. Everything that we read, see, and do, we light from within ourselves. And the light that comes from within is meaning. It is the reason for the things that we see and the things that we hear. And it takes every action, every thought, every problem of the day and casts a light on it. And that light is insight, understanding. It is acceptance, because within ourselves we have suddenly experienced a meaning in life, a meaning in the things that happen, a meaning in the books we read, and for that matter, a meaning in the dreams and visions that come to us, a meaning which puts a light of spiritual certainty and integrity upon every action of our material lives. Every action of secular living that is not destructive is lighted, and that which is destructive is also revealed because of the integrity within ourselves. So the most important thing for most people to do is to get that light burning inside of themselves. Well, keep it burning, make it burn brighter, but realize that its purpose is not just simply to burn in there. Its purpose is to cast a light upon the outside, to make daily living and daily thinking and daily working meaningful, so that the job is no longer drudgery, that the family is no longer a responsibility that destroys our own privilege to relax and have a good time, that the light within ourselves tells us that the real joys come from the fulfillment of the ideals and aspirations that we have, and these fulfillments are the beginning of a true spiritual insight. And as we gradually gain more and more light inside, which we gain from various outside sources sometimes also, we see a great painting that tells us something. We read an important article that reveals a truth we have always needed to know. It may come from the outside or the inside. But when this light shines from within ourselves afterwards into the world around us, it gives us the key to the conditions that we all must face. It gives us a reasonable understanding why every happening in life is a way of growth. Each incident is an advancement. Each day is an opportunity for the release of more of the true life and insight within ourselves. If we can begin, at least in part, to think in this way, we will discover also a great happiness. We shall discover that life is a joyful growing. And that the dirge we have put in there is simply misunderstanding on our own part. Life is not a series of tragedies. Life is a great series of opportunities to be more than we are. And to the degree of being more, we grow. And as we grow, all the opportunities become steps towards spiritual liberation. With these types of thoughts in our minds, we will not rely, or will not feel it necessary to rely too much upon a peculiar type of psychic experience. It is much better to hope that we shall earn and have a kind of mystical experience, an experience of alchemy, an experience in which all the base elements of knowledge are transmuted into soul power. All the marvelous opportunities for growth, all the beauty of nature, all of the labors and handicrafts of human beings are all part of a great language of expression, a language seeking to glorify God through the tools and instruments and bodies that we have in this world. Every part of our nature is created with the potential power to glorify reality. Every cell in the body, every nerve and fiber within us is part of a great plan to glorify life and most of all to pay homage to the giver of life. If we begin to move into this kind of thinking just a little bit, I think it will in many instances lay the foundation for a growth that can be very important. And if in such growth, and by the achievement of such growth, if by quiet and gradual unfolding we reach a certain degree of harmonious adjustment with life, then the legitimate mystical experience will come. It cannot come until we are ready. And until we are ready, what might come instead is not the genuine thing. Only when we personally make the adjustments in our own lives can we expect the results. Now, in many lives, it may well be that we will do our best, but the mystical illumination will not come. It will not come because our large pattern of growth has not yet discerned it. But if we grow continuously and properly, life by life, we will not only have the mystical experience of understanding the full experience of existence, but we will also have the mystical opportunity and experience of knowing the one divine power that is at the source of everything. All of these experiences lead us back again to the glory of God and oneness with the great plan of life. And when we understand the plan, we will know the planner. But until we do, we must live as we are, seeing in a glass darkly. But someday, through proper growth and proper development, we shall see face to face. Well, thank you very much.